Well, joining me now on the Sunday Spin is my good friend Chris Mooney. Chris is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois and a great observer of the political scene. Chris, thanks for joining me this morning.
And my pleasure, Rick. Thanks for making me laugh first thing in the morning again.
Well,
we need a little more laughter this year, I think.
Well, you know, and it's kind of interesting, too, because the Tribune had a story about, is it okay to still make fun of Donald Trump because of the serious issues that are involved in his candidacy?
Well, you know, we've been making fun of politicians in this country since George Washington and when they were, you know, so maybe they didn't make fun of George Washington. I don't know.
He didn't. Oh, nobody made fun of George Washington. Come on.
But they certainly made fun of, you know, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, and God knows Abraham Lincoln was the butt of many a joke. So, you know, if you, you know, that's part of the democracy, the you know, bringing them down to the level of the common people, right? You get to laugh at them. And also it helps us through these tough times. I mean, you know, my feeling is right this year, if you don't laugh a little, you're going to cry. So and I've already done enough crying, so. A little laughter is good, but I will say, I mean, that was pretty good shtick last night. I thought it was funny. Trump is a tough one to do because he's all, you know, he's so funny just in and of himself. It's hard to, how do you parody the guy? You know, for my money, the you know, they've done a lot of political satire over the years on Saturday Night Live, but you know, nothing compares with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey doing Hillary and Sarah Palin back in '08. That was astonishingly funny.
And yes, parody is a great thing, but in some respects, and part of the thing that was raised in the story was that every time that Trump is kind of made fun of or because of something he says or whatever, he actually gets stronger to some degree. You know, and let's face it, look at all of these things that he said throughout the campaign that would have been the death knell for any other candidate.
Yeah, that's true. And but you know, everybody has to take this from. It's such an unprecedented year. We don't know what to. I mean, I don't know what to think. You know, my wife, she was very upset when he came out and announced his that he was going to run back in June of 15 or whatever it was, and. You know, he came down the golden escalator and said some comments about Latinos that she took offense to. And I said, you know, don't worry. This is just a promotion for his next reality show. It's just a way to pump up, you know, the brand so he can, you know, move himself up to 10 billion instead of 7. So I've lost all credibility with Laura. I told her it was going to go on more than a couple of months, but the guy does have a serious chance of winning. There's no doubt about that. So, I mean, in that sense, we have to take it seriously, you know, either pro or con. And, you know, I remain to some degree agnostic on this. I have my own point of view, but I think democracy is about people taking a look at the different options and making a choice as opposed to come up with some ideal candidate in their own mind. And it's serious business.
Well, but what does it say that Trump, you know, has this strength? And what does it say about some of those Republicans who were adamantly against a Donald Trump nomination have now seem to have fallen in line? And among those, you know, Joe Ricketts, and they were very active. The Republican Ricketts were very active in super PAC opposition to Trump. And now you have Joe Ricketts throwing in $1 million into a pro-Trump super PAC.
Yeah, and you have Ted Cruz. I mean, he's the most obvious example, right? You know, Trump goes on TV and slanders his wife and slanders his father, and he crawls back to him when he sees the polls are moving up in the right direction. But, you know, and I think that demonstrates a certain opportunism on the part of Cruz. But, you know, again, but it's a choice, right? These people have apparently looked at the two alternatives. They've looked at Hillary Clinton and they've looked at Donald Trump, and they've, you know, they made the calculation that, you know, despite what you may or may not like about Donald Trump, and despite, you know, what you may or may not like about Hillary Clinton, on balance, Donald Trump for them is better than Hillary Clinton. And, you know, especially for politicians, again, like a Ted Cruz, not, you know, I mean, his, as an example, I don't know, he may have had a, the road to Damascus conversion and realize that Trump is going to be the greatest president in the world. But it does seem like opportunism. I mean, they say, well, you know, if he wins, I can't, you know, if I oppose him, then I will be persona non grata with the Trump administration. And we know how he deals with his enemies, perceived or real. Maybe if you want to have a future in the Republican Party and you think he's going to win, you better get on board, because if you don't, you will be in the wilderness for a long time.
Or on the other hand, if you perceive yourself as a potential Republican presidential candidate 4 years hence, and we actually played a clip of Reince Priebus previously, the head of the RNC, suggesting that there would be penalties levied against Republicans who had signed the pledge to support the eventual nominee and then turned around and disregarded that. I don't know how you enforce that pledge, though.
Well, yeah, any such penalties would only be, sort of moral and argumentative. I mean, they're not going to be able to do. I mean, votes are votes, and if you go out there and get the votes, there's nothing the party's going to do about it, or they can't do anything about it. There's a couple of ways to cut it, and this is again the calculations that these Republicans have to consider, because if he wins and they're on the outs of them, then they're toast. If he loses and they've supported him, especially if he starts really imploding, I mean, if he starts down a road that, you know, over the next, 5 weeks, really gets outrageous. And, you know, you never know with this guy, right? It could happen. I mean, we may have already started down that path with the last debate. But then if they've supported him, and they have this disastrous loss in November, maybe they lose the Senate, who knows what happens, then they look bad because they look opportunist. They've supported a guy who the country rejects wholeheartedly. And so they have to consider that. But then the other side is, what if Trump loses and they're opposed to him, and then they were blamed for that loss. So say it's a close race, say he doesn't implode, he's working hard, and say he learns how to shut his mouth and stay, you know, just read what he's told to read.
And he loses Ohio, and it's John Kasich's fault.
Right. Or Florida and Bush, you know. I mean, the Bushes are a good example of the ones that seem to be sticking to their guns. I mean, they're out, they're opposed, they were opposed early, I don't think they're coming back, because they're very much, in some ways, sort of Trumpian in the sense that they're sort of tribal, right? They feel like, Trump denigrated one of their own, and therefore they're all going to close ranks and stomp this guy, and, like they did with Saddam. So, it's a tough one. I hate to be a Republican at this point.
We're speaking with Chris Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined on the phone by Chris Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. So, Chris, I didn't even ask you, what did you think of the debate?
God, I mean, it was a tough one.
I mean, I thought it was fairly interesting the first half hour. I thought it was, I was actually surprised in the tone and tenor of it. It was as a debate normally is conducted, but then it just seemed to kind of go downhill from there on Trump's part.
Well, and Hillary, I mean, she really knows how to get to him. I mean, it's not hard. I mean, that's one of his problems, his weaknesses are very apparent. His big weakness is that he has a huge ego and he refuses to admit wrong or ignore a slight. He's got to get the last word no matter what. And with a guy like that, you know, it's not hard to push him where you want to push him. And she did it. I was listening. Oh, I guess it was on CNN, one of the lab shows the other day, and somebody asked one of the commentators, did he take the bait? And he said, well, she was more like a fly fisherman. She didn't need to chum the water. She just flicked that little, you know, that fly right exactly where she wanted, just a little bit, and he just ran with it, and he's still running with it. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, what, it's not very pretty. I feel sorry for the guy. Really, not coming off very well here to say, I think even in his own comments, is with as much denial as he has about things, he's going to be embarrassed.
So we've got the vice presidential debate coming up on Tuesday, and then we have a town hall presidential debate. Do you think the town hall kind of forum changes anything in the dynamic of the presidential debate?
Well, you know, with these two, I mean, in a normal case, yes, they have to try to, you know, to be more friendly and more down home. They look, I know who you know,
I feel your pain.
I really care about your stuff. Pardon?
I feel your pain kind of thing.
I feel your pain. I'm not going to sigh. And these two, I don't know how they're going to react to that. I mean, neither one of them are, you know, the most warm and fuzzy people that you ever met. And, you know, is that necessary? I mean, there's a, you know, debate. Do you need to like your president? Is that somebody we want to have a beer deal?
Well, I mean, but
God. That's not my criteria. I don't want to have, necessarily want to have a beer with him because it's too crowded with all the civil servants.
But
and Donald Trump might be a lot of fun to have a beer with. I mean, he reminded me of on a Monday night he reminded me of my drunk uncle down at the end of the bar at the corner tap, right? A lot of fun.
Well, but do you think these debates really change anybody's mind or move anybody? Given how polarized we are.
Yes, and the research tends to show that they don't. It's a sort of a Hippocratic oath situation here, right? First, do no harm, and you don't want to really screw it up. You know, I think we'll look back historically and know if Trump really screwed this up in the first debate. I mean, I think it's a little too early to know.
I mean, Obama didn't fare well. He lost to Mitt Romney by all accounts in that first debate they had.
Right. Yeah. And but on the other, I think the first debate with McCain important for him because he was introducing himself largely, you know, not a very well known person, and he came across as measured and smart and calm, and I think that helped him a lot in people saying, well, okay, I guess I can vote for this guy. But these two are so well known to us in their own ways that I don't know. But you're right about the polarization. People, they know what they know, and that's what they know. And it's really as are all elections. This will come down to turnout, right? Who is actually getting out to vote? It doesn't matter who says who they like to a pollster. It's like who is going to get there on election day, or as is the case in so many places now, including Illinois, the weeks before Election Day, and who's actually going to get them out there. And that takes motivation, individual motivation, and organization oftentimes to really get that thing going. And you look at these candidates and you say, well, on the motivation point, it strikes me that Trump's got the advantage there. I mean, he's got some really rabid followers. I don't know, you know, of the, say, 40% of the people in the country who now say they're a favorite Trump, I don't know if all those 40% are rabid followers of his, but certainly there's some, and I don't know what the percentage is. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton is probably going to have the organizational advantage by a long way. They've been working on this in the traditional way for a while, whereas the Trump campaign seems to sort of be just going on it. So, again, it's who, you know, who's actually going to pull those levers or fill in those Scantron dots, and we'll, you know, let's see.
Yeah, and I think truly that is the big question, and most definitely here in Illinois, particularly with among African American voters, because we're going to see, you know, a presidential election without the hometown president on the ballot, and how does that affect numbers for Hillary Clinton in the African American community, which is a crucial block for Democratic hopes up and down the ballot in Illinois.
Yes, and, you know, even at the presidential level, of course, what really matters, I mean, is what goes on in the Philadelphia suburbs. There's been a lot of talk about that, and I really think that's a good place to focus if you're thinking about what's going to happen in the national election, because it's also it's a good analogy for people in Illinois to understand. I mean, we have, you know, we've got Chicago, we've got the Collars, and then we've got downstate, and Pennsylvania is kind of split up that way too. It's also got, you know, Pittsburgh over in the corner, but Philadelphia is the big dog over there, and their suburbs are like ours, like huge, and lots of people living in them. And the swing voter, as it is in Illinois, you know, is the soccer mom. Basically, it's this woman living in the suburbs, white woman by and large, living in the suburbs, who's got kids, is fiscally conservative, but is not socially conservative. And, you know, they're concerned about security, but they, you know, they're also not, they don't want to think of themselves as racist. And so, you know, that's the kind of person that's going to decide this race. And if the thing is, because Pennsylvania, if Clinton holds Pennsylvania, it's likely that she will win.
All right.
There's other combinations, but she's got to hold Pennsylvania.
Sorry, Chris, I got to hold you to that right there.
All right.
I appreciate your time this morning. Chris Mooney, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You too, Rick. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
We'll be back with more right after this.